I am subject to someone. There is someone who tells me what to do, and I do it. And more to the point, where he's really going is, there are people under my authority. I have the right to rule people under me, the centurion says. Dan?
I'll kind of rehash what you said with what I'm thinking. He's a man under authority. He's a man in the military. People in the military understand that without the chain of command, the structure of command, it all falls apart. So wherever he is, there is authority, and there must be off. It must be true to that authority.
Yeah, military terminology, he gives rules, they follow it. He said it three times, didn't he? He said, look, verse 9, I say go, they don't question it. I'll get back there in just a second, Mr. Eugene. They say go, I say go, they go. I say come, they come. I say jump, they say how high, right? You told me to jump, I'm going to jump how high. I say do this, and they do it. The idea is, he said, Jesus, I understand the concept of authority. The concept of authority is I have the right to make a rule for people. And when I say it, it goes. Mr. Eugene?
By this reading, we understand that he understands where his authority starts and when it ends. And by this, we know that he knows that he doesn't have the authority over what he's asking.
Okay, true. That's a good point. He's saying, I don't have control over healing him, but I know, Jesus, that you do. I understand. This is really important. It's not just I believe in you and what you can do. It's I understand you. I understand the power that you possess. That's a really important concept. Yes, ma'am.
It just shows that he's pointing out the chain of command.
Okay, chain of command. Now, how does that pointing out of the chain of command, how does it impact what he's saying about Jesus? I understand what he's saying about being a centurion, but what's the connection between that and what he's saying about Jesus? Why did he bring it up? Yes, sir?
Let me push this forward, because I want to focus
not to be on us just yet, although you're right. You have to follow what Jesus says. I want it to be on the authority of Jesus. What is he saying about the authority of Jesus here? Yes.
He knows that Jesus has the authority to heal.
Okay. So Jesus has the authority to heal.
To speak it,
and it is so. He doesn't need to be in the room. Jesus, you don't need to go. That was an interesting comment. Jesus, you don't even need to go. Don't go. Well, why not? Because I know that you have the right to rule over everyone everywhere. If you speak it, it is so, even if they're miles and miles away. This idea of the scope of the rule of Jesus. Let me just say, I don't know what you're thinking as we're getting into this, but you cannot teach somebody the truth unless they understand this. You can't help a church grow unless they understand this. Because the first time they hear something they don't like, they're just not going to do it. But what I have to understand is Jesus' word goes no matter what I think, no matter if I like it or not, because when he speaks, it emanates power. Now, what I want to get to here is, why is that so? Why is it that even now, half a world away and 2,000 years later, when Jesus says, this is what you do it. And it doesn't matter what you think. Yes. He's got a little clout, you know? He's got a little clout here. He made you. He made you. And this is why I gave you Romans 1. Look at Romans chapter 1. What was going on throughout Rome? And you guys should know this by now. We study Romans about every 30 minutes around here. Romans 1, what was going on in Rome in Romans 1? Say again? Yeah, lots of bad things. Idolatry, the thing that our brother was talking about over here, they've exchanged God. We don't want the will of God. We're going to trade God in. You have verse 23, they exchange the glory of the God for the incorruptible. Verse 25, they exchange the truth of God for a lie, the truth of God. I still acknowledge that there is a God, but I don't want to do what God says. The problem is, you just don't have that option. Like in the military, you know, you guys, we watch too many movies, okay? And in movies, in the military, the guy that like breaks the rules and does it his way, he's the hero. That's called movies. In real life, you follow the rules or they kick you out. Following rules is required because you don't have this option to make it all about you. Well, that's what they had done, but look in Romans 1:18. It says, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. Now look at verse 20. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power, His divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. No one who does what they want to do instead of what Jesus teaches has an excuse for that. Even if they come up with the best excuse you've ever heard, it always comes back to Jesus, John 1, made you, animated you, sustains you. You went out and blew it. Good job. So He shed His blood to redeem you. He has the full scope of the power over you, and He has the right to rule. I just don't know how you can even study anything else unless you can get this point. Otherwise, we'll just do the things we like and don't do the things that we don't. Any comments or questions about this opening idea? Yes, sir.
He proved Himself in every example.
Yeah. Proved Himself in every example. And He doesn't have to be standing here. That's what I like from our story. He doesn't have to be standing here. He can be in heaven. He could have said it 2,000 years ago. And though He's in heaven and He said it 2,000 years ago, when He says go, you go. When He says come, you come. When He says do this, you do this. That's Christianity. One more thing I want to say from Matthew 8. We didn't read it yet. What was Jesus' response to this centurion's words? It's pretty cool. What was His response? Wow! New American Standard says He marveled. Jesus marveled. He was amazed, some versions may say. He said, I have never seen such technical exegesis of power in... No, He said what? I've never seen such what? Faith. That is a huge idea here, and this is really why we began with this. Look in verse 8. He says, I know I'm not worthy. Verse 9, I understand authority. Verse 10, when Jesus heard this, He marveled and said to those who were following, truly I say to you, I have not seen such great faith with anyone in Israel. You've got to take respect for His will and faith and put them together. You can't say I trust You and not do what He says. It's not faith. And you can't do what He says but not truly trust in Him. You have to honor His authority, and that equates to faith. That's the connection we got to make in our churches and in the world and in our families. We've got to make this connection. We throw the word faith around like everybody who can spell Jesus has faith. The faith that marveled Jesus was faith that acknowledged His right to rule over everything and believed that when He said it, it was so. That's the faith of the text. He goes on to turn it into a lesson, verses 11 and 12. He said, there are going to be a lot of Jews in hell, is what He's saying, weeping and gnashing of teeth, who claim such great faith, so much faith in God, but they did not give Jesus the position of power in their life that He deserved. He went on to turn it into that lesson. All right, let's look at something else here. So when we first talk about authority, our first indication is it's the power that He has, but sometimes it means the right to act. Who are we talking about when we're talking about, let's talk about religious things now, the church, the Christian. When we say that authority sometimes means the right to act, what are we saying?
The power of God to save us.
Okay. Yes and no. I'm going to attribute that to the first thing. When you talk about authority, he has the right to do things. But when you talk about the right to act, you're talking about what we can do. I mean, yes, God has the right to act, of course. But when you talk about the right to act, you're saying we have authority. Don't you have authority in this life? You have the authority to make decisions. You have the authority to raise a family. You have a lot of authority. But what you have to understand is all of the authority you have has been handed to you by God. I only have the right, the power, to act as God has given it to me. This is a big problem in the way we think today in our culture of great power and independence and capitalism, that you establish this sense of power and now you get to do whatever you want. No. I don't care how powerful you are, how influential you are, how many things you can do. All of it fits underneath that which God gives you the right to do, right to act. Do you have a comment?
According to our knowledge of the truth and our faith in the truth.
Yeah. Faith in the truth. Let's look at Matthew 21 and see if it helps with that. Look in Matthew chapter 21. Let's begin here in verse 23. Listen to this. When he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him while he was teaching and said, "By what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority?" You see that? Who gave you this authority? They're asking the second question. I see what you're doing, Jesus. The question is, who gave you the right to do what you're doing? I just want to pause for dramatic effect right there for 10 seconds. Who gave you the right to do? You guys understand you have the responsibility to ask that question. You've got religious friends doing a lot of things that you don't believe are biblically accurate. Why don't you ask them this question? Who gave you the right to do what you are doing in the name of God? Chances are your friends may be offended by that. What do you mean who gave me the right? I can do whatever I do to please God. No. Who gave you the right to do what you're doing? That was their question. Now, the silly part is they're asking it of Jesus, the one who, you know, made them and stuff. But it's still a valuable question. By what authority do you do these things? And so he comes back and he says, I will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. Now, I don't know how many times you've read the gospel, but when Jesus asks a question, they're in trouble. And that's what he's going to do here. He says, let me just ask you one question. If you get this right, I'll ask you all the other questions. He says, the baptism of John was from what source? From heaven or from men? And they began reasoning among themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, then why did you not believe him? For if we say from men, we fear the people, for they all regard John as a prophet. And answering Jesus, they said, we don't know. And he said, yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. Okay, so they asked him a pretty straightforward question. Jesus, we see what you're doing. Where did you get the right to act, Jesus? Now, what's the answer to the question? Where did you get the right to act? Yeah, from God. Or I am God. You know, he could have said I am God or from God, right? But instead of saying, I got my right to act from God, he said, let me ask you something. Here's my question for you. Why did he do that? Why did he ask him that authority question? See who they believed in? Good. What did he want to teach them about authority?
Yes, sir.
He wanted them to acknowledge that John baptized by the authority of God. That came from God too.
Right. Yeah, let me get this out there. Let me get what you just said. They should have asked themselves that question. John's teaching that we don't really like, by the way, the Jews, we like it. They didn't like it. We don't like this. What they should have said is, where did John get the right to say that? Two options. They didn't even ask themselves the question. I like the way you said that. Back here?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what source did he have the power to do that?
Yeah.
That's what he was trying to get them to work through.
Here's what's interesting about that. They understand the implications of that. I know they understand because they reason to themselves, uh-oh, we're in a pickle here. Because if we say that we can show that God gave John the right to baptize and prepare the way for Jesus, then they're going to rightly ask, why don't you do what John says? And we don't have an answer. But they also understood this. If we say from men, what's going to happen? We're going to get stoned. Because that's an insult. It's an insult to say, what you're teaching, man came up with it. That's insulting. That's not religion. It's not true religion. It's not faith. And so they knew that. So when you ask somebody, hey, I see that your church teaches this. I see that you believe that. Where did you guys get the right to do that? You put them in an interesting position. Because if the answer is our church, our pastor, our eldership, our council, our committee, our history, they have incriminated themselves and probably know it. But if the answer is open your Bible, what we're doing is from God, it changes everything. The point of this story is everybody gets this. It's not like this is some local CFC closed door truth. Everybody gets this. If it's from men, you kick it out. If it's from God, you keep it in. Everybody knows that. The problem is we muddied the waters with non-authority conversations. And we've decided that everything can kind of fit now as long as you believe in Jesus. But we saw in our first story that that's just not the case. Faith and authority go together. Look in Matthew 24. Matthew 24. It's important to see that the right to act, to believe something, to do something, all of it comes to us directly from God. Look in Matthew chapter 24, verse 45. Matthew 24, 45. I'll back up to verse 42 to add a little bit of a weight, a little bit of urgency to what Jesus is saying. Matthew 24, 42. Therefore, be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. Be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will. Now, check this story out. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave says in his heart, my master is not coming for a long time, and he begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, and the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, verse 50, and at an hour which he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces, assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, you don't have the word authority in this text. Instead, it's just described for you. What he could have said after verse 44 is, when Jesus comes back, those who are doing what he gave them the right to do will be saved, and those who have decided to do what they want to do will be lost. But instead of saying that, he told them a story, verses 45 and 46. What is, in the story, a faithful and sensible slave? Define faithful and sensible slave in the story.
Follow the directions of his master.
I will do what my master has told me to do. I will value my work by taking what has been given to me and doing it, first of all, do it now. That's sort of part of the story. You don't know when the Lord's coming back. You don't know when the master's coming back, but when he comes back, you are responsible to do what he has delegated for you to do. We've become such an empowered and prosperous people religiously in this country. We have the ability to do so many things, and so we do it. We think that ability equals right. Let's study that for a couple weeks. If you have the power to do it, then you have the right to do it. Our church has the power to build this, to do that, to engage in this, so we're going to do it. You only have the right to do what God has handed to you to do. We can't study anything unless we get that. We'll study, I'll show it to you, I think, in the next class. We'll study some examples like how we use our funds. How we use our funds. You can go round and round and round with people on reasonings for how you use your church funds, and you will not get anywhere unless you understand these first two things. Unless you understand that God has the right to rule this entire place and everything that happens in it. And whatever I do with his funds has to be handed to me in some way. How we ascertain that authority, well, we're going to study that a lot in the next 12 weeks. But I've got to find out what has he given me to do, because that's what a faithful slave does. We must connect the idea of authority and faith. That's what we're trying to do this morning. Where there's no following the authority, there's just no faith. They go together. He said, faithful slave honors the authority. All right, any comments or questions about that? We move to our last section here. Important ideas. Here's a third thing to add to this. You may open your Bible to Matthew 28. Matthew 28, very important. I don't think I've preached an authority sermon here in 3+ years that hasn't had this verse in it. Properly connecting the two is vital to faith. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read Matthew 28, 18 through 20, and then open it up to you just a little bit. Open it up to you to try to help us connect right to rule with right to act. He has one, we have the other. I want you to show how they are both found in this important passage, Matthew 28, verse 18. By the way, it's worth asking, or it's worth saying here that this is a pretty amazing moment, Matthew 28, 18 through 20. Jesus had just defeated Satan, sin, and death and raised from the dead, and that was pretty impressive. The empty tomb is impressive. But then, a moment later, they were going to watch him ascend into the glory of heaven. So he is right in the middle of two of the singular most momentous things that have ever happened on the face of the earth. Victory over death, the empty tomb, and the ascension. So in between, he says this. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. All right, this is my favorite little authority sandbox. Just about every single syllable of this is great. So you pick anything you want, but I want to see you connect the right to rule with the right to act in this rendering. What do you see here about authority in this text? There are no wrong answers, unless I just sort of stare at you blankly for a few seconds and then turn away. No, there's no wrong answers here. What do you see? Yes.
The fact that he says therefore means the whole going and doing and baptizing. Everything he says to do cannot happen without that authority.
Okay, good. Let's start with that. Dan got us going. Look at the first verse. Tell me about Jesus' right to rule from this section. Let's just talk about that first. When we say Jesus has the right to rule your life, on what basis do we say that?
God has given him authority. He's on the right hand of God, and God has given him the authority.
The Father has given him authority. That's a powerful concept for the first century Jew who strongly believed in Yahweh and did not so strongly believe in the Messiah. We believe in God. We're not so big on this Jesus business. No, wait. The Father gave me all right to do what? Rule. All right to rule. Now, how has he proven that right to rule? Okay, Jesus, I got you. What's your evidence? Well, there's a tomb over there that you're welcome to go visit. The empty tomb and the ascension. All power is given to me. Tell me about the scope of Jesus' right to rule. How big is it?
All.
All? The text says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and in earth, the spiritual and the physical and everything in between. I really love Luke 8 for this. We don't have time this morning, but there's four miracles in Luke 8. You guys, I think I preached this a couple of years ago. It's really good for marking. It's four miracles in Luke 8. You've got the calming of the sea. You have the healing of the woman. You have the casting out of demons. And you have the resurrection of the girl. So you have Jesus' power over the natural climate. Okay, wherever you go, Jesus has power. You have Jesus' power over the human body. He healed the woman. You have Jesus' power over the spiritual world. He cast out the demons. And you have Jesus' power over your soul, life and death. He called the girl's spirit. It's awesome. He said, come back. And the spirit went right back. Your soul goes wherever. the power that Jesus has. This is before he was raised from the dead. He had established that he has all right to rule. Now, if he has all right to make all rules in your life, what does the text go on to say about your right to act?
You have to be taught what those rules are, and then you follow.
Okay, you have to be taught those rules. That's a good point. Teaching them. We need an education on this. You can't just say, I believe in Jesus, and he's guiding me, and I know what to do. You just don't know what to do, because he has to tell you what to do. You say, well, what do you mean? I mean authority. That's the way authority works. The one in power says, go, come, and do, right? What's the A word, A-L-L, right? All. It's not just all authority. It's teach them to observe what? All things. All things that I've commanded you. All things that I've commanded you. And so there's great emphasis there. And then I had a shirt. Crystal Goff made us a shirt at home. I ordered it a little bit too small, so Summer won't let me wear it anywhere. And the way things have been going lately, it wasn't going to work out. But three alls. All authority, all things, always. What's the always? I got the all authority part. I got the all things. He has right to rule, right to act. And what's always? He's here all the time. Good. He's got the right to make all the rules. I follow his rules, and I do it all the time because he will be with me always. He'll always be here, even to the ends of the age. All right, any comments or questions about Matthew 28? There will be lots of Matthew 28 study before we're done. Let me ask you to just go to 1 Peter 2. Could have selected any number of places, but I just happened to be studying 1 Peter at the time and thought that this would suffice. It is easy for us, because we worship at a, I'm going to throw some terms, I'm not a term guy, but I'm going to throw some terms around, at a sound, conservative, non-institution, you've heard all those terms. At a church like this, it's easy for us to become myopic, to become very narrow-minded. In other words, you read all this, you're listening today, and you're thinking, can't wait till we get those guys. We get authority and the world doesn't. They need to change. It's easy to look at it like we've got it right and they've got it wrong. And when asked to prove that, we would talk about how you use the funds, instrument music, non-instrumental music, all those kind of things. What I want you to see, and you're going to be pestered by me on this, you're going to be so agitated. Part of teaching is agitation, just the way it works. Otherwise, you'd all be asleep right now and I'd have to ring a bell or something. You will be agitated over the next 12 weeks. How we will study a concept and you'll be so sure it's a perfect concept to go to your Baptist friend with. And I think it will be a good concept to go to him with. But that equally and just as forcefully has a message for you. Because authority isn't just about church organization. Authority is about every single part of your entire life. It's not just about the church. It is about the church. We're going to talk a lot about that. But it's also about every relationship. I was just thinking about 1 Peter 2. In 1 Peter 2 and 3, just get you guys to dig in a little bit. How many relationships between the Christian and someone else, how many relationships are discussed, relationships is discussed, relationships are discussed, in 1 Peter 2 and 3? How many relationships between the believer and... Give me some. There's a lot of stuff. Like chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, is the relationship of a wife to her husband. A wife to her husband. In fact, a believing wife to even an unbelieving husband. In verse 7, it turns around to what? A husband to his wife. This is how a wife will behave in reference to her husband. This is how a husband will behave in reference to her wife. Now you're sitting out there thinking, I thought we were going to talk about authority. And that means church organization and how we do things here. No, we're going to talk a lot about that, but we're also going to talk about your marriage. Well, I thought we were here to talk about authority. We're going to talk about your marriage. But I thought, you see, it's easy to do this. Where we say authority is about church. God's right to rule your life means your home life. It means your marriage. It means the way you treat other people. What are some other ones in chapter 2? Chapter 2, you've got, What about verse 12? Chapter 2, verse 12. A believer and what or who? Non-believers. Yeah, well, we're getting there. We're almost there. The next verse. In verse 12, it's how a believer interacts with an unbeliever. Authority matters in how you deal with people of the world, just like it matters how a church is organized. Verse 13 is you and, big brother, the other big brother. You and the government and how you interact with that. Verse 17 is all people. Verse 18 is servants to masters and masters to servants. And then you know the verse that I read all the time. Love this verse. Best verse ever for relationships. 1 Peter 3, verses 8 and 9. To sum up, all of you be every relationship, everything, all the time, harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble, and not returning insult for insult. So here's just what I wanted you to see. We're going to talk about how church is organized. We're going to talk about church leadership. We're going to talk about the worship of the church. We're going to talk about how the funds of the church are used. We're going to talk about general benevolence versus restricted benevolence. We're going to talk about all that. But we're also going to talk about your marriage. And we're going to talk about the way you treat people who don't love you. And it becomes important that when Christians think about my right to act, they don't limit it to church. They carry it everywhere. So I just wanted you to see that. You're going to see us dig into that a little bit further as we move along. I just have a couple of minutes left to introduce something. Yes, sir. Yeah. There's a verse for that in Corinthians. That's right. I think my time's up, guys. All the clocks are a little bit off. But let me give you one idea to go into next week with. I'm going to jump ahead. We're going to look at Acts 15. But see that word right there? I want you thinking about this word going into next week. There is a monster elephant in the room, like a mean, mad, do elephants buck, whatever an elephant does when it's mad. And it's just bouncing off of the walls of your home, and it's bouncing off the walls of this church building. It's tearing everything out. And it's called bias. Bias is the most subtle, dangerous little authority underminer there is. And guess who's got it? Lance does. And Randall does. And our elder, Mr. Matt, does. And Miss Deidre. We are all carrying this elephant around, and we got to tie it to something. And we're going to talk about how that affects authority going into next week. If you'd like to prepare, Acts 15, and also remember you can pick up all the sheets in the back. Thank you, guys.